Equilibration Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva again, the editor of the journal, and today I have the great pleasure of chatting with Dr. Jennifer Kogan, who's associate professor in the Department of Medicine at the Perelman School of Medicine in the University of Pennsylvania, and Dr. Kogan is also director of undergraduate education for the Department of Medicine. Welcome, Jen, to the podcast for the first time.
Thank you very much.
We've had a few chances to talk about your research, which I've been very enthused and grateful for. First time we've had to do it formally, though, with somebody else who can listen in on us.
Yeah.
The paper, I suppose I should start by mentioning, is going to be released in the February 2012 issue of Medical Education. The title is Faculty Perception of Feedback to Residents After Direct Observation of Clinical Skills. Feedback, as you know as well as anyone, Jen, is just one of those topics that comes up everywhere when we get into medical education stuff. It's been one of the main challenges that people have been noting for years as students desire more and more feedback and faculty feel like they're delivering it and it's not being responded to. And so given that it's been such a topic of conversation and such a focus of empirical study, maybe I can start by just asking you to tell our listeners about what separates the work you've been doing from previous literature.
Yeah. First of all, thanks again for just allowing me to talk and share some of the work that we've been doing. And I just wanted to acknowledge up front, this is work that I've been collaborating with the American Board of Internal Medicine. I think we were motivated to look at feedback a bit of a different way. Our larger research agenda has really been about how faculty assess trainees when they're watching them interacting with a patient. And so I think what differentiates this work from some of the other work about feedback is that this is really focusing on feedback in the context of a faculty member who's watching a trainee, interacting with a patient, making observations about what that resident is doing well and what they need to be working on. And then what happens when faculty, once they have that information, how they think about giving feedback, what the emotions are that are associated with having to give it, what their goals are when they give it. So this really focuses on feedback in the context of having observed a trainee with a patient and trying to understand essentially what's happening in faculty's brains and I guess in their hearts with their emotions
right.
As they are trying to deliver this message. That's, I think, where the focus is. And there has increasingly, as I think you know, has been some qualitative work around feedback. But our feeling was a lot of the prior literature sort of outlined what the steps were for giving feedback. A lot of workshops talk about how should you give it. And this really looks at it from, so what are faculty thinking about? If we understood that a little bit better, we would have a sense of why do faculty still find this to be so difficult? And maybe it would help us to understand why faculty feel like sometimes they're giving it and our trainees aren't hearing the message. So is there something happening that is impacting that?
Right. That is a really important focus, in my impression. It does seem like we've been spending a lot of time creating algorithms and telling people how to deliver it without actually taking the time to sort out what's going on, how can we take advantage of what they're thinking rather than trying to push them into seeing and doing things that just don't come naturally to us.
Yeah.
One of the interesting aspects of your study was that you observed these feedback delivery opportunities and had these conversations with the faculty. In doing so, you observed some videotape scenarios, or at least had the faculty watch videotape scenarios and also had them watch live encounters. Was there a reason for including both sorts of observations, and did you see any differences between the two?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you're right. In order to understand how faculty make decisions about feedback and what about feedback is challenging to them or what makes it easy, we wanted to look at it in two different ways. So one way was that we just asked the faculty to watch videotapes and say, okay, you know, if you had to give this trainee feedback, what would you say? And how would you say it? And why would you say it that way? And then we sort of put them in the position of having to actually do it, where they sat in a room and they watched a standardized resident with a standardized patient. And then they had to actually give the feedback to the standardized resident. And the reason we wanted to look at it both ways is sometimes saying what you're going to do or talking about it isn't always the same as what actually happens when you have to do it. And we thought that there would be a different emotional component when you were forced to actually give that feedback with a human being sitting in front of you, as opposed to just having to talk about it in a theoretical way. I think we found that there were similar themes. Faculty, I think, were somewhat in touch with what makes feedback challenging or difficult, even when they were reflecting on videos. But I think some more of the emotion and the discomfort and the issues related to self-efficacy and how confident or competent faculty felt in doing it, I think really came out when they actually had to do it. And I think we also, in the study, asked faculty to watch the videotape of themselves giving the feedback. So they had to give feedback, and then we quickly burned a disc and then said, okay, let's watch this together now. And to have faculty reflect on feedback in a way that they otherwise might not have been able to do.
Right. And so you've got a very rich data set then from three different angles with the same individuals. And curious about the self-efficacy findings that you came up with. Were the impacts on or of their self-efficacy about their perception of their capacity to deal with the clinical scenario, as some of your previous work showed, the relationship between what they perceived in the resident and what they themselves would have done, or was it more about their capacity to actually give guidance meaningfully to these trainees?
So it was both, actually. So what was interesting, and I should say that, we were in this study, we had faculty who really represented the entire spectrum of experience as clinicians as well as teachers. Many of them still felt quite unsure about how effective they were in feedback. And people actually described that they felt like they maybe learned to give feedback by trial and error and hoped that in that process they got it right. But we found that their self-efficacy in part related to sometimes their own clinical skills. So faculty talked about, it's really hard to give feedback about a skill that I myself might not be so competent in. But we also heard that faculty had low self-efficacy when it came to giving feedback about particular competency. So giving feedback for some faculty about interpersonal or communication skills was an area that they felt that they were just not as good at. And then there was just low self-efficacy and a lot of questions about what's the best way to give feedback. Like, do you use your notes that you might have taken when you were watching the trainee? How do you order the feedback? Do you go in the order of the encounter or do you talk about what's most important? Faculty struggled with how serious should you be as a faculty member giving feedback, or how do you balance the positive and the negative? So I would say that it was both low self-efficacy at times about their own clinical skills, as well as low self-efficacy with respect to their teaching skills of giving feedback.
Great. That makes a lot of sense. And as I alluded to, it's one piece of a much bigger results section that was quite informative, and we don't have a lot of time to go into all the details. But for my last question, I want to divert your attention a little bit away from this particular study, in that as I talk with you again and think about this particular paper, I would actually commend to the readers that they go and they pull the variety of papers that you've written in this domain, because I think it's a great example of programmatic research efforts and how you've taken this particular problem and really come at it from a number of different ways, and I think have led to much greater insights than had you done a single project and then moved on to something else. So my last question for you is, in thinking about where you might be going with this, given that it does seem to be a programmatic research effort, what advice do you have for the many people in medical education who, like you, are very busy clinically and educational roles? Have you managed to maintain a productive research program over such a long term?
Ooh, that's hard.
I didn't promise the questions will be easy.
I guess first and foremost, I've been incredibly fortunate to have collaborators. That's probably for me what's been most important because I still do teach and I still see patients. So I certainly think what is very helpful is finding individuals with whom you can collaborate and who have similar research interests. So I've been very fortunate to be able to find those individuals. And in doing so, and in my collaboration with the American Board of Internal Medicine, have been fortunate to be given the protected time to be able to pursue an area of research that's been interesting to me, but has also been of interest to the board as well. And that probably has been a large part of the success for this project, which truthfully required a tremendous amount of resources to accomplish. So I'm not sure if that gets to really what your question was, but a team effort, and there were certainly resources that were involved, which frankly, I think as many of the readers know, it's challenging in medical education to get funding for research.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think that's good advice, the collaborative nature and bringing together the different members of the team that can provide human resources and otherwise to support the project. Congratulations again on the work. I continue to look forward to seeing how it progresses and evolves. For now, I think I'll call the podcast to a close, though, and we'll just remind the listeners that I've been speaking with Dr. Jennifer Cogan from the University of Pennsylvania, and the specific paper we've been talking about is entitled Faculty Perception of Feedback to Residents After Direct Observation of Clinical Skills. It'll be released in the February 2012 issue of the journal, and again, as I suggested, it's the most recent public dissemination of a much larger research program, and I'd encourage each of you to go and take a look, both for the insights it provides and because, as I said, it is a really nice example of some of the things that people try to encourage when they suggest that programmatic research efforts are important. With that, Jen, I'll thank you very much for your time and let you get back to planning your revised clerkship. I know it's been keeping you busy this month, and so I do appreciate you squeezing me in.
Oh no, thank you for the opportunity to be able to talk and share the work. I really, really appreciate it.